Into sports.
20 yards out, Hurst to shoot. Don't shoot! Oh, what a goal from Fabinho! Wow!
Then get into the all-new OTB Sports app.
I think when he apologises to me, I probably will say hello to him. Yeah, no.
Videos, sports news, live scores, interviews.
If Fabregas is going to come up to me in the street and give me some of the mouth that he would have given me on a football pitch, what would he do? He'd get a slap.
Plus, exclusive content on the OTB Podcast Network. The biggest names in sports, ready when you are. Search OTB Sports on your app store and download it now.
The OTB Podcast Network, with Green Farm on the go. Snack smart with 100% natural, protein-powered chicken bites.
The News Round on Off the Ball.
With Gillette, we don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette, made of what matters.
This is News Talk.
And you're very welcome along to Monday night's Off the Ball. It's Richie McCormack here with you right through until 10 p.m. tonight. Packed show on the way. This day next week, we'll know how Ireland's Six Nations campaign will have begun. They're off to Cardiff for Sunday's meeting with Wales. We'll be looking forward to the game tonight with two bona fide legends, one from each country, and a pair who are more than a little bit au fait with one another. Sworn enemies at one time, now the best of friends. Ronan O'Gara and Mike Phillips join us after 8 o'clock for Monday night rugby. We'll also be touching on transfer deadline day and Liverpool's resurgence in the title race. Liverpool, of course, playing a prime part in transfer deadline day today, as well as they look to shore up their defence. Pat Nevin joins us after 9 o'clock for the football show. And between 7:30 and 8 o'clock, Lawrence Donegan is going to be on the line to look back on Patrick Reid, the man who was the most natural heel this side of Ric Flair. He was at it again at the Farmers Insurance Open over the course of the weekend. We'll be talking about his controversial drop at the 10th on Saturday, and if Rory McIlroy is guilty of similar. Richie here with you until 10:53106. If you want to get in contact via text tonight, you can tweet us as well at Off the Ball. We do have joining us on the line as well is the one and only Adrian Barry. Adrian, good evening to you.
Evening, Richie.
And joining us from the wilds and the mists of the OTB office, we have Carl Mullaney joining us as well. Carl, welcome to the show.
Evening, Richie.
We will start, Adrian, with golf nerd paradise. Christmas came early for people who like to keep tabs on golf minutiae over the course of the weekend. It was the 10th hole on Saturday at Torrey Pines at the Farmers Insurance Open. Patrick Reid found himself in a spot of bother and decided to give himself a drop. It seems as though he has worked within the rules. On Saturday night, I was seeing footage tweeted from the PGA Tour that looked like something from The Office or from Parks and Recreation. It was a single shot, it was a handheld camera rushing to get in front of Patrick Reid to see what was going on. I thought he had, I don't know, swung a club at somebody in the gallery, that maybe he had lost his reason and things had gone a bit skew whiff. But instead, no, he had looked at the ball, decided that it was embedded and took a drop. And the world went on fire, Adrian Barry.
The amount of discussion about an embedded ball has been incredible. A phrase I was that familiar with, I have to say, Richie, outside of 24 hours ago. I'm also conscious as well that Joe Malloy is taking the night off because he's so concerned about the the position of the ethics of golf, and also we're in the presence of a golfer who plays off five, so I'll shut up in a minute in that context. But fundamentally, look, Patrick Reid didn't break any rules. That's what we're dealing with here, and that's the context of this entire thing. Was it entirely strictly within the spirit of the rules or the spirit of the game, maybe more so? I think that's an altogether different question. And as you said, the guy's got history, and I think that that's the context here. Like, I think that two issues. One, it was Patrick Reid, right? Fundamentally, you listen to the players that talked about it afterwards, you listen to the commentary around, that's the backdrop here. But B, he's asked the marshal if it bounced, the volunteer on the course, did it bounce? She says no. In double quick time, he's down there with his, meddling around in the grass to see exactly what's going on. He gets it up, he gets it out of there before anyone has the chance to counter it. He's telling his players, listen, I'm going to call the officials in. He calls them in. Like, he could have done what Rory did, done the exact same thing without calling any official in at all. Of course, he could have also stalled the ball and said, I'm not sure about this. I'm going to wait. Let's get the official in. There wouldn't have been anything to have stopped him to do that at all. And I think that, listen to the players about it afterwards. look, you know, the game has come out in his support. The officials were out. John Much, is that his name? The chief PGA Tour official was out in CBS saying, listen, you know, the guys did absolutely nothing wrong here at all. But there was one, I'm sure you've seen some of the players comment on this afterwards, and there was one that I wanted to bring to people's attention tonight. I've seen it in the last little while from a name that he's the world number 50 golfer. But I don't mind admitting, Richie, was not a name that I was familiar with at all before I heard it. Lanto Griffin.
What a great, he sounds like a Star Wars character.
number 50 in the world, tied seventh at the tournament over the weekend. But he came out and he said, listen, 99% of golfers would have gone the other way. They wouldn't have taken the drop. He said, it's sad and it kind of pisses us off. And I think that's the way, that's the difficulty what you're dealing with Patrick Reed.
Carl, Adrian alluded to it there. And I don't want to you to hide away your modesty on this one. You play off five, I believe. So you'd be more in a position than anybody else in this office, I think, to comment on what Patrick Reed did. Give us a sense of actually what he did and how off it would be in terms of his behaviour.
Yeah, well, I think, and Adrian has referenced it there, he didn't strictly break any rules, and that has come out afterwards, and people have been very strong on that he didn't break any rules, nor did Rory McIlroy. But I think in 99.9% of the cases in that scenario, you would probably expect the golfer to wait until a referee will come in and inspect it for himself, rather than Reed actually moving the ball and maybe dictating the narrative. And then when the referee comes along, the ball is actually removed from where it was supposed to be embedded. I think that's why there's been so much outrage in the hours and days since then, and also probably amplified by the fact that he did get up and down after the ball was taken out of the where it was embedded, and he did get the free drop and got up and down and made a great par, and obviously went on to win the tournament pretty comfortably then on Sunday. So I think really the issue was that he did move the ball before the referee came in. I think had he waited for the referee to come in to see the ball where it had landed, and fair enough, if it was embedded, the course was very wet at Torrey Pines, and it I'm sure it happened on multiple occasions in different groups that the ball did embed in the ground. And if the referee came in and saw that for himself and gave him the free drop, I don't think there'd be any issue.
Carl, for instance, you're in a four ball in Enniscrown on a Saturday morning, and obviously you don't have the benefit of officials and match referees and all that kind of stuff. Somebody pulls that stunt in your group. What's the reaction among the other three?
Yeah, I think what you do, if you're in your normal four ball on a Saturday morning, you probably get your playing partners to come over and have a look at it before you touch the golf ball and take it out of the position that it's in. I think Patrick Reed probably took that on himself. And, you know, subsequently, he's been proven that he was right to do that. The officials were happy enough with his conduct there, and he did go about the book. But I think Adrian mentioned a word there, ethical, probably in the spirit of the game. You probably would expect players just to wait until the referee comes in to leave it as it lies. That's probably the underlying rule in golf, regardless of the vagaries of various rules, is play it as it lies and leave it as it lies. And if the referee has to come in and inspect, let him do so.
We've been running a poll on social media over the course of the last couple of hours, up on Instagram in particular. We've asked, is Patrick Reed bad for golf? I think we can get the old results of that one up. Is Patrick Reed bad for golf is the question we've been asking. And I believe that the vast majority of people have come out in favour. I think it's in the 70 percentile are saying that Patrick Reed is in fact bad for golf. Now, Adrian, I can't get over, like, surely this guy, even if he isn't acting within the spirit of the law, if he's not indeed breaking any laws of the game, surely the fact that there's this character, there's this hateable figure, there's this guy who's at the top of the leaderboard, who's actually a bit handy, but he's rogue and no one likes him and people want to see him beat. Like, that's the core of any great sporting rivalry, is not only that we want to see one person succeed, but we also want to see the other side of the ball fail and doomed to failure. And surely, in a way, that's good for golf, no?
He's brilliant for golf. We would not be talking about the Farmers Insurance if only for this. Like, absolutely. I mean, if Malloy was there, fair enough.
Oh, we get a decent half an hour of it, yeah.
There's no chance, Richie. You know, you wouldn't be having Lawrence Donegan on tonight to have the chat about it. Look, I mean, is that by design from the great game of golf? No. How many players in sport generally, and I would say golf is top of the pile, where you get some players coming out bagging on another one in the way that Lanto Griffin has done there, and Tony Finau, and there was one other in the...
Xander.
In the Xander Schauffele that I watched as well, like, they're not really, it's not veiled criticism or dislike of this guy. You know, even when the official comes over, like, it's all very leading, right? Like, it's like, oh, I'm feeling this lip. Can you feel the lip? Oh, sure, I feel the lip. And I think that, like, it's difficult because, like, that official, in my view, once he comes over and, like, look at, we've all watched the clip way too many times, then it's healthy for us, right? Let's all just admit that now off the bat. But he's been asked a very different question than he is if he comes over and the ball is still in its position. Suddenly, that Gov official, the rules official that comes over, has not been asked about whether there's a slight dip in the ground, by the way. Because I think anybody who's ever struck a golf ball knows that there's no... It wouldn't be an incredible coincidence that there's a lip in the ground where the ball has landed. You know, there was questions asked, was it created by a ball or maybe similar to what a thumb might create, for example. So there's loads of questions around that. But the official has not been asked to rule on the ball. He's been asked, really, in his mind, he's like, if I go against this, this is an absolute S-storm and I'm in the middle of it. And suddenly there's a bit of clarity maybe about which way he goes.
We've had a text in on a similar vein. Phil says, Patrick Reed is a marked man. He knows his every move is being watched, so why wouldn't he save himself any possible hassle and ask for a rules decision? Seems like a complete lack of self-awareness. Enough from the first time. This is where I'd deviate from that. I'd say that Patrick Reed is 100% self-aware, and I think he almost thrives on the image that's out there of him now, Cahill, that he can push the rules. He can be that guy who goes to the very edge of legal and, you know, faces a lot of questioning of what's happened at the 10th on Saturday and still manages to go out on the Sunday and hold on and beat Victor Hovland and win a pretty big tournament of the Sunday. He has the mental capacity and the mental strength to just brush this aside, and I think he's pretty much self-aware.
Yeah, you'd have to say that he's hugely impressive, and the way he played on Sunday was brilliant. I suppose the back nine on Saturday after the immediate incident happened, he actually struggled pretty badly on the back nine on Saturday. But he has built this reputation, and I think his record on the tour stands up to scrutiny. Obviously, that brilliant Masters win a couple of years ago. And, you know, you asked the question, is he good for the game? He probably is good for the game in a strange sort of a way, insofar as Adrian says that we are talking about it when otherwise we probably wouldn't be. And, you know, for the Ryder Cup, he was on against Rory McIlroy a couple of years ago as well. So that's an interesting one. But I think it's probably fair to say he's not the most popular player in either the European or the American team rooms at the Ryder Cup. But I think you're right. I think he was very impressive on Sunday, to brush that aside, given the hullabaloo that was on social media and indeed in the world of golf generally. Hugely impressive performance.
Denny has been on tweeting on 53106 saying, lads, golf is bad for golf. But I want to move on from this, Adrian, but I'm just curious, like, this kind of minutiae rule stuff is, I would imagine, and other people can get involved in this as well, off-putting to a degree to people who aren't necessarily born and bred golfers.
I think it brings them in, to be honest with
really?
You. Like, again, I think, again, if you look at the amount of people who... It's great for the game. Do you know, would the PGA Tour wish it? Absolutely not. Rules officials, absolutely not. Players, probably not. But I think for the rest of us, it's fantastic titillation. Like, I also think, by the way, like, VAR, right? That's what we're... Bring in VAR. If there was ever a case for more VAR, if Joe Punter can tweet in, right, and say, hey, listen, I spotted something there in the 10th that nobody else saw, and, like, bring it to the attention of the PGA Tour, why couldn't they just go to the TV compound and go, hey, 30 seconds, like, you've already seen it, tell us what happened.
Yeah. You don't even need, like, I'm watching shot by shot on where these shots lie virtually when I'm sitting at home doing the news updates, and it's pretty easy to keep track of these things. Adrian, while I have you, you've been getting ratioed on Twitter like you're Stephen Donnelly. You tweeted at halftime yesterday between the match of West Ham and Liverpool. 3-1 victory it was in the end for Jurgen Klopp's side. At halftime, though, it was scoreless. Liverpool had only got one shot on target, as had West Ham, to be fair. And Adrian Barry tweeted, I see the old swagger is back. 24 hours or 45 minutes later, we're talking about Liverpool being back in the title race. Do you feel chagrined and chided by your halftime hubris yesterday?
I suppose I should do, should I? Is that that's the official?
You don't have to.
What I should say here. Like, I feel a bit like I'm defending a fairly losing battle, but sure, look it. We're here now. I kind of felt that, like, the point stood at halftime. I was acutely aware that, like, I could look like an awful mug But like that's sport for you, Richie. You could look like a mug pretty soon after that. The point I was making was, by the way, like obviously the screen grab that I sent out had shown that Liverpool had one shot on target in the first half. And like I suppose also the point I was making, he says, and he's explaining here, and that probably means he's losing.
You're losing.
Was that you know, there was a lot of chat about the old swagger back being back, that phrase, particularly after the Spurs game. And I really felt that that was a poor case for it there. I would say that, like, if you look over the last two games, like, funnily enough, the strongest case for the old swagger being back was the second half yesterday. You know, I think the first half you could probably file away under a bit of Spursy as well. But so we'll see. Like, the signs are there. I think if you're a Liverpool fan, I did make this point on the last Friday's AM as well, that I think if you're a Liverpool fan, like, you've every reason to start feeling positive about things. And in the same way that a couple of games that start to go against you becomes a bit of a blip, a couple of games that are going with you, you might as well enjoy them. Listen, I was rounded upon at full time, Richie.
Hounded off Twitter. Yeah, Liverpool. We'll be talking about them in more depth a little bit later on with Pat Nevin on the football show. As we mentioned, Patrick Reid, will be discussing with Lawrence Donegan after 7:30. As I say, between 8 and 9, Ronan O'Gara and Mike Phillips are going to join us to look ahead to Wales versus Ireland in the Six Nations, and indeed their own storied history together in the game of rugby. But the news round on Off the Ball on News Talk is with thanks to Gillette. We don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette, made of what matters. And Cahill, Liverpool doing a bit of business tonight.
They certainly are, Richie. Sky Germany are reporting that Liverpool have agreed a deal to sign Schalke central defender Ozan Kabak. It's understood as a loan deal until the summer, with the option then to buy for £18 million. Jurgen Klopp's defensive options will also be bolstered by the acquisition of Preston's Ben Davies. Liverpool are expected to conclude the signing of the 25-year-old shortly, and he's already completed a medical. Celtic had been in the race to sign the defender, but manager Neil Lennon says they were gazumped by the Premier League title holders. The Hoops did, however, sign Everton defender Jonjo Kenny on a loan deal.
These things happen, you know, and it's not the first time it's happened to us, and certainly to myself, you know, over my time as a manager. So yeah, you're always looking at, you know, possible backups, but if that's not the case, then we'll just go with the way the squad is and just add Jonjo to that.
Adrian, it looks like they're doing business at last in defence. Ozan Kabak is on the way, Ben Davies is on the way. This seems like something they probably should have sorted 6 months ago and not being left until the last kind of overs of transfer deadline day.
Yeah, I thought it was mad, the stuff that was going on earlier. There was all that talk about Klopp saying, oh, listen, we weren't going to jump in. But it became all the more evident as players came back and got injured again that they really needed to. Like, is Ben Davies going to be everything for them straight away? Like, possibly not, but like, is Brighton during the week, you know, he's the sort of player that could easily go in there and do, I mean, I don't want to say he'd do a job for you, because looking at some of the stats today, I can't say I followed the championship closely enough to know the absolute ins and outs of this guy, but looking at some of the stats today, by all accounts, it's not just some journeyman championship player that they're bringing in. Obviously, you know, a club, the stature Celtic been in for him, give you an indication of how highly he's rated. But yeah. Look, I think the idea of whether Kabak or Ben Davies or whoever it is that comes in as a success or not, they had to do business, hadn't they?
Absolutely. We'll be talking about that with Pat Nevin. Irish international on the move. This one, a little bit of a surprise, Cahill.
Yeah, Republic of Ireland international Troy Parrott has joined Ipswich Town on loan. The Dubliner had been on loan from Tottenham at Millwall, but his stay at the Den has been cut short to facilitate a move to the League One club. Ipswich currently lie in 11th place in the third tier. Parrott has made a total of 14 appearances for Millwall, with 11 of those coming in the Championship. He didn't register a goal during his time there, though his spell was hindered by an ankle injury. Elsewhere, Shane Long has been linked with a loan move to Bournemouth, which would see Josh King move in the other direction to Southampton. Bournemouth manager Jason Tindall isn't convinced striker King will be still with the club tomorrow. A disappointing deadline day has seen the Championship club's bid for Newcastle's Matt Ritchie rejected. Tindall says he can't be sure that'll be the last of the bad news for Bournemouth fans.
Everyone knows Josh King ain't going to be playing for Bournemouth next season. There will be clubs that will be interested in taking Josh, but a lot of criteria has got to be met. And I imagine we're only finding that out once the window closes, whether things have moved on or Josh is still here at Bournemouth.
Adrian, Irish players on the move. That Troy Parrott move, first of all, seems things didn't work out for him. He was an unused substitute in Millwall's last three games. Gary Rowett left him a glowing recommendation heading out the door at the Den today, saying he'd been taking part in extra training. He'd been trying to get things to work for himself there at Millwall, and sometimes things just don't land, so he's had to drop down a division. So hopefully more game time for the lad.
Yeah, God, how long? It doesn't feel that long ago that we were all saying, we were all giving out about Jose. He might have been right. Like, you know, get him into the Spurs team, get him some top-class football when Kane was out injured. I don't know. We'd all maybe get a little bit sort of drunk the Kool-Aid a little bit too much. Yeah, but we sort of grasp onto whatever we can. But yeah, you would like to see, maybe you hope it's just got like almost like a Shane Duffy type thing where it just became like he's better than that, and it was became more about his confidence after a while rather than his talent. And you hope to see him back up again.
Yeah, it's a strange one. When Luke McNally moved over to Oxford there last week, and Carl Robinson was talking about his playing man's football, essentially playing for Pats and playing, you know, senior level football. I think that's what guys these ages definitely need. We'll get back to the news round in a moment, but every night this week we're giving away a 6-month Now TV Sky Sports Pass as part of our Super Bowl build-up. At the end of the week we'll have our Snap Super Bowl preview special. That's at midday on Friday on our social channels. But to be with the chance of winning that 6-month Sky Sports Pass tonight, just identify our NFL mystery voice, who says he's honoured to be tonight's mystery voice.
I'm excited to be here.
He really is.
I'm excited to be here.
If you think you know who that is, text your name and your answer to 53106 for 30 cent and we'll contact you after the show. It's all with thanks to Now TV. Catch all the Super Bowl preview shows and the game itself this weekend with a Now TV Sky Sports Pass. I want to move on to this one as well. Call Shamrock Rovers snapping, or they've gotten essentially who they're going to be starting the season against.
They certainly have. They will begin the defence of their SSE, Electricity League Premier Division title against St. Patrick's Athletic. The other opening day fixtures on the 19th of March will see Dundalk. The cup holders, of course, go to Sligo Rovers, and Finn Harps will host Bohemians. Promoted sides Longford Town and Drogheda United both have home matches on the opening day. They'll play Derry City and Waterford respectively. The schedule for the First Division and the Women's National League will be released next week. Already today, clubs have been meeting with the FAI with regard to getting the season back underway. Damn McDonnell in the Irish Independent reports that a €3.6 million package was put to clubs. It'd see the Premier Division clubs receive a flat rate of £215,000, which would also include additional variable amounts depending on turnover. First Division clubs would receive a basic €50,000 rate with the same add-ons. It's also being reported that prize money levels will rise from €475,000 to €600,000, and with no crowds expected for a large chunk of the season, plans are still being developed around a streaming service for fans.
Yeah, you'd hope it works out a little bit better, as good as the service was than Watch LOI last year, because I think the numbers involved in that weren't necessarily brilliant. Shamrock Rovers as well losing Aaron McInniff today to Hearts over in Scotland. We're looking ahead to the League of Ireland. We're also hearing that the GAA Championship draws have been delayed a little bit, Cahill.
They have. They've been postponed. They were scheduled to take place next week, but now it's understood that the GAA does not want to decide the pairings for the provincial competitions, given the uncertainty surrounding the return to training and the general health situation at the moment. Of course, the Allianz Leagues were due to begin at the end of February, but they're likely to be pushed back due to the continued restrictions.
Adrian, this is a case of just getting it right and making sure things are done well. I think David Power, the tip manager, came out with that today. He just wants to see things done properly rather than rushing to any snap decisions about when and where stuff should begin or not. Adrian? Oh, we lost Adrian. I think we have. Cahill, you continue on there.
Yes, indeed. In rugby, the Ulster trio Nick Timoney, David O'Connor and Greg Jones have all committed their immediate futures to the province. O'Connor and Jones have signed deals to keep them at the club until 2022, while flanker Timoney has committed to the province until 2023. Now, we've already spoken about Patrick Reid, but the Farmers Insurance champion says the controversy over its free drop did not affect him ahead of the final round. The American shot a final round of 68 to clinch victory by 5 shots at Torrey Pines. However, he was embroiled in controversy over a drop he took on the 10th during his third round. The eventual winner moved his ball, which he believed to be embedded, before calling in a rules official. He was granted a free drop and subsequently made par. However, speaking to reporters following his win last night, he said that the controversy did not affect him ahead of the final round.
After everything you went through the last 24 hours with the ruling yesterday, and obviously there was a lot of noise, did that affect you at all, and what were your emotions going into this round?
No, not at all. Like I said yesterday with the rules official, they said that you know, they showed upstairs and everything with me yesterday, that the protocols I went through and everything that transpired was, you know, was the right thing. And so from that point on, once it was handled, you know, we just moved on and kind of went out there today and really just got on the game face, went out there and just tried to continue building the golf swing, continue feeling comfortable with hitting certain kinds of shots, and going to see how the swing was going to hold up under a, and not only being a final round, but also being in the final group and having a chance to win, because and it's very easy to, when you're making changes, to make quality golf swings on the driving range. It's one thing to, put into play at a tournament, in a final round at a demanding golf course like this. And, it definitely allowed me to feel very comfortable and confident with how the game is and what's, coming forward.
There you go. That is Patrick Reed. Carl, thank you so much for the news round tonight. Adrian Barry as well, and your staunch defence of Patrick Reed and the fact that he is not, as Patter suggested on Twitter, a cancer for the game. Pat says as well, sure, it's the Wild West in the US. Rules on golf courses mean nothing in the States. The mulligans and all sorts. And perhaps crucially, would Henri have admitted handball? I think it's time we delve into the Henri handball in further depth. We'll do that possibly after 7:30. Or instead, we'll talk to Lawrence Donegan. Thanks so much, lads.
The news round on Off the Ball.
With Gillette. We don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette, made of what matters.